This podcast is presented by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at www.uctv.tv. Enjoy the presentation.
So, the quality and impact of research at UC Santa Barbara compares well with that of the top universities in the world. And when I talk about our research, I point out that it addresses many of the most important problems facing science and society today. It's not constrained by departmental boundaries, and I'll talk some more about how that works. And it's done in a global context in close collaborations with research institutions around the world. And our most important asset in the research program is the faculty and the faculty researchers. These are our Nobel Prize winners. We've had a remarkable string of 5 Nobel Prize winners, 4 in science and engineering in the last decade. But it also talks about the interdisciplinary nature of our research. I have been in the physics department here since 1981, except for my break as a laboratory director. And 2 of my colleagues in physics department won Nobel Prizes in chemistry. Another one won the Nobel Prize in physics, David Gross. And Herbert Kroemer won the prize in physics, actually from an engineering department, which is a very rare event. But it does represent the fact that people work across programs very easily here. Should also say it's not only these great stars, but we also have a remarkable group of assistant professors who are among the top few universities in the world in their ability to get the top young investigator awards in the country. So our global science, let me talk about something that isn't producing technology today, but it's in my field of particle physics. The world's most sensitive microscope in the world is the Large Hadron Collider that's about to turn on below the French-Swiss border at the European Laboratory CERN. That's taking over as the world's largest accelerator from the laboratory I directed in Illinois. And a global collaboration of scientists have built this remarkable detector, CMS, which is 12 and a half kilotons that's instrumented like a Swiss watch, a modern Swiss watch. And at the heart of that is a tracking detector with 250 square meters of microstrip detectors that are silicon detectors that track the particles with 50 micron precision. And of that, so where in the world was that built? Well, most of that was built at Santa Barbara and at Fermilab. And for the world, the only university in the world that had such a big role in that was here in our physics department, UC Santa Barbara. So the way we construct ourselves for research is really like all of the modern American research universities. It's organized for research with a core of departments where we recruit the best faculty and students. And those are disciplinary in nature, and that's surrounded by a series of institutes and centers doing research. That is the way we present ourselves to the outside world, to society, to technology industry. And we believe that no university has a better environment for that interdisciplinary research. So I'd like to just step through a few of the examples. Some of them are engineering technology. Some of them are more generally in world-leading research. So the National Center for Ecological Analysis and Synthesis, that's the NSF Center for Ecological Analysis, and it's bringing the strength of informatics to the little data sets that ecology researchers have collected over many years and dealing with all their problems, but it actually much of their what they've brought to it has revolutionized the way we think about ecology. Our Marine Science Institute, we have advantage of a world-class marine research institute right here on campus. And it's, of course, that has its own benefit. It's actually looking at such things as long-term ecological reserve in the Santa Barbara area and looking at fisheries. But in fact, the fact that we have this right on campus also was part of the background for the Institute for Collaborative Biotechnologies, the fact that we have both engineering and marine research and people talking to each other every day. In nanotechnology, we have the California Nanosystems Institute, which has just had the building dedicated for Virgil and Betty Ealing's Wells recently, and it is with UCLA is the leading California, the state of California's technology push on nanotechnology, looking at a broad range of world-class research in spintronics, bio-nanofabrication, quantum computation. Another, in a completely different area, the first National Science Foundation center of its kind in the country was when the Institute for Theoretical Physics was established here back in 1980, and now is the Kavli Institute. It has broadened the picture of what theoretical physics is applied to. You can see from this year's programs on anatomy, development, and evolution of the brain, physics of the Large Hadron Collider, dynamo theory, climate change, boundary layers of the Earth, and theory and practice of fluctuation-induced interactions, bringing the tools of physics to a broad range of science and engineering. And one of probably the fastest growing institute of our at the moment is our Neuroscience Research Institute. As you heard yesterday, with Princeton and Santa Barbara are the two major research universities in the country that don't have the large professional schools of business, medicine, law. On the other hand, we don't have clinical research, but we have a large program in biomedical research, much of it at NRI, on such areas as Alzheimer's and macular degeneration. But the new development is our Center for Stem Cell Biology and Engineering, with research areas in molecular mechanisms of stem cell differentiation, translational bioengineering, and regenerative medicine, especially getting funding, including facilities, from CIRM, the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine. But it emphasizes that close tie between science and engineering here on campus. That's the particular thing that we can bring to this burgeoning area of research. And finally, some of the things you're hearing about with more focus at this meeting, that Institute for Collaborative Biotechnologies, looking at understanding biological mechanisms on a broad range of applications. As I say, this developed here as a natural place for it because of the range of things from engineering to marine science that we had such excellence here on campus. And I always talk about the Solid State Lighting and Energy Center in talking about our research that you heard more about yesterday, that really is leading this technology development, but it's also leading in the ability of working with a broad industry, many industry partners, in one area of research at a university environment. I should say we heard a lot about the applications. They forgot one killer application for LED. It's those bands, it's, you know, a headlamp you put over your head and put it around it. They're wonderfully strong, and many people use them for hiking and camping. I use them for grilling in the back in the dark. You can actually tell when the meat's done. It's really a breakthrough. It's like a killer application. So who supports our research? Well, most of it is from the federal government, much of it directly to Santa Barbara, some of it through universities and industry. We get indirect funding. Because we're not a medical campus, it's not 80% National Institutes for Health. This happens at many medical campuses. 41% of our direct federal funding is from National Science Foundation. We're in the top 20 in about 5 of the 7 research directorates at NSF. Department of Defense provides about 28%. We're about 8th or to 10th different years in 6.1 basic research funding from DOD. And although we don't have medical school, NIH is a very important part of our funding for things such as NRI, the Neuroscience Research Institute. But we also receive major support and very important support from technology companies that we're hearing about some today, many long-term partners, from research foundations such as the Keck, MacArthur, Mellon Foundation, and from state agencies, most notably lately, including the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine, and we think in the very new future from the Public Utilities Commission as part of our energy research. So over 20 years, if you just look at one metric, which is our extramural funding, it's now at $176 million this year. That's doubled in the last 10 years, and it's doubled in the last 10 years before that. And that's not just because federal spending for research has gone up. Our projects have gone up at about half that rate over that time. The rest is simply because UC Santa Barbara is competing better at those federal research dollars.
First of all, let me very, very briefly introduce our office, because we are a little bit different. Most universities have a sponsor projects office that deals with research support contracts, research agreements, and a technology transfer office that deals with inventions, and they're separate entities, and the amount of communication between them varies greatly. So when we actually formed, we realized that when we're working with industry, whether it's a research agreement, a technology transfer agreement, or a material transfer agreement, a lot of the issues and the skill sets are very similar in both, and we need to understand the same parts of your sector when we're working. So we're what I call a hybrid university office. I have one group under me that deals with all of the industry agreements, all the research support agreements. I have one group under me dealing with the out-licensing of our technology. The two are the same office. They're embedded together in the office suite or the trailer, if you want to know the truth. And our vision then is to promote productive and effective relationships. We want to know who you are, get to know you however you come into our office. And we want you to know that as your transactions change, perhaps from licensing to research or research to licensing, you don't need to learn a whole new set of people and a whole new culture of an office. We're going to be there with you cradle to grave for your research. So we're only going to take a few of them. I just want to put up the various ways you can collaborate with UCSB. I'll go into the top ones in a little more detail, but let me say corporate programs or affiliates led by Leslie Edwards is a phenomenal resource, both for recruiting and for getting to know our expertise. There are a lot of research center affiliations, and some of you might not know, we actually have unique facilities like clean rooms that you can rent, so to speak, from UCSB if you have some specialized research you need to get done. And of course, our faculty are very active consultants, and these arrangements with you really help them be all they can be when they teach our students. So I'm going to now then switch to a few that our office handles, but do keep in mind the whole spectrum when you work from us. Step one, I just want to let you know, this is in your packets as well, but our researchers are extraordinarily efficient when it comes from turning research dollars into intellectual property. A recent survey by Autumn, which is a professional university technology manager society, said that basically most universities you can expect to receive one disclosure for every $2 million in actual research expenditure. Ours in the same period was 1.17. So we are creating more intellectual property for your money. If you look at our research centers like Mitsubishi or Solid State, where they have the benefit of some really nice, focused industry dialogue continually throughout the project, you see very quickly where it goes to, and that's one in every 370, which is more efficient than the Economist reported technology transfer companies to be. And this is why I encourage you, whether it's a one research project or a whole center, your collaboration with us helps us solve academic problems in a manner that's actually needed for the product to actually result. I won't dwell too much on this, but we are also highly collaborative. I'll just say that it's usually an exception to get a disclosure that only has one department listed. So we have a biologist and an engineer coming together. So a lot of times there are prototypes before they even come to our office, which greatly assist our companies. This chart is also in your packet, so I won't dwell on it, but if you look at it, you will see we have a very different profile than most universities in that biology, as great as they are in many areas, only represents 6.5% of our total disclosures. That's because we don't have a med school. What you will see is a whole part of this chart is engineering. We're what I call an engineering-dominated portfolio. And also the physical sciences, chemistry and physics, make a very strong showing as well. So we're used to licensing in an engineering environment, and the joke at our office is if you give us a pharmaceutical compound, we get very confused. You give us semiconductors, we know exactly what to do. So we're kind of a little upside down compared to some of the other offices you work with. If you do license with us, just keep in mind that we have a variety of flavors. Our goal is that we want you to play with our technologies, fall in love, and then make the commitment to license it, knowing that it's a decision that's good for your company. So we do have varieties. We can do everything from a letter of intent, which is a very minimal financial engagement, to allow a quick short-term feasibility studies, fundraising, whatever you need, for up to a year. These are two-page documents. We usually get them in place in a matter of a week once the technology is good, all the way down to a license agreement, which lasts the full life of the patent and includes the right to commercially sell. So when you engage our office, you don't need to have the answer that you absolutely want to use our technology and you know it. If you are interested and want to play with it, give us a call, and we can find an instrument that's going to fit your needs. After licensing, obviously, for those of you who have done it before, you can continue to engage the expertise, typically through a sponsored research agreement where you pay for the laboratory research in specific areas you want help with, or through faculty consulting. So at the end of licensing, your relationship with UCSB does not have to be done. We do have the inventors and the experts of the technology, and we're very happy to share them. Now, very briefly, if you are looking, we do have a list of some available technologies based on what this conference was presenting. We have that on our website in the Industry Center. But what I want to look at very briefly is this third point. As Mike said, there are a lot of federal funding here, and we have a big spectrum of faculty. I think as a campus, our faculty, by and large, is more savvy and with industry and enjoys industry much more than most universities. That said, we do have research themes that have been predominantly federally funded. So if you see interesting research projects, give us a call. A lot of times when we do an IP audit, we will find that there is some undisclosed, really interesting technology that's been federally funded that the researcher never thought could be commercially applicable, that the company can come in. So if you see interesting research projects, give us a call. Ask us if we have anything. We'll actually go back and talk to them, and we can see what's there for your company to work with. Now, switching briefly into sponsor projects, which is when you actually fund a research project, what I'm going to do very briefly is contrast why you might want to do a gift with why you might want to do a research contract. Research contracts are very important, especially if intellectual property is a major factor in your company, if you want to make sure that you have rights to resulting. You get a contractual right to receive a first option to negotiate a license, so we don't market it out. We give you the disclosure first and say, are you interested? And you have a right to receive reports. Indirect cost, which is the equivalent of overhead, does apply, and these are important costs for our infrastructure maintenance, but you do get the full benefits of a contract. Keep in mind, and I guess I don't know if anyone's talked about this, but when you do a research agreement, another thing that is unlocked is some wonderful matching programs. There's a program called UC Discovery, and we can all help you link up to it, which if you are a for-profit and you have a manufacturing or an R&D presence in California, you can apply with our faculty to a matching program where you will receive a dollar for every dollar of your investment. So your $50,000 project gets $100,000 in resources. It's a wonderful program. UCSB is highly competitive within that program. It's only open to the UC campuses, and we have very high visibility in the program. So when you are thinking about research funding and you have a California presence, this should be one of the first things you think about to leverage your investment. My office, Leslie Edwards' office, pretty much any other administrative office can link you into the Discovery program if you want to learn more. And as I said, fast turnaround. Proposal to award, if you're successful, is within 100 days, not 9 months, like the federal programs. And finally, I want to give a word about philanthropy, which can be a fabulous way to sponsor research. It's important just to realize a gift is a gift. IRS precludes us from giving rights like IP, so it doesn't come with promised IP rights. I will tell you, when a disclosure mentions gift funds, it's good business to contact the donor. So we definitely do that, and we have one license that came from gift funding. But just be aware, we can't contractually promise it. But this is a wonderful way to do seed projects where the risk of IP is relatively low, or maybe you're just engaging a faculty member to see how they work with you and see how good of a fit it is. Because if you note, our campus has made a decision that philanthropic support is very important. We actually don't charge indirect cost. So if you don't need the contractual guarantees, your money can stretch farther if you contemplate a gift arrangement with our researchers. And Mitsubishi is one example of also a hybrid arrangement where sometimes if you're making a larger investment, keep in mind that we can do a research contract to cover the actual research and the intellectual property issues that arise. But some of the other support, like fellowships, can go via gift. And again, expand your money to have a bigger impact for what you're able to give.
So I think most people would agree that there are at least three key elements to a successful startup. One of them is recruiting good talent. The second is identifying technologies that can be commercialized for which you can identify customers. And the third is to spend as little money as possible in doing both of those first two things. So I'm going to break apart my discussion about how we interact with the university into those three categories. They're not mutually exclusive, but we'll start with people because people are the most important part of any company, small or large, and move to our technologies and then describe how we've extended financing, how we've been able to really reach out and grow as a company, even in our year and a half of existence, through interactions with the UCSB. So our company was founded in March of 2006 by three UCSB faculty members and one local businessman. One of the UCSB faculty members, Alan Heger, was on Mike's slide, Nobel laureate in chemistry. And Alan identified technologies that were invented by two other faculty members, Tom So in the Materials and Mechanical Engineering Department, and Patrick Doherty in the Chemical Engineering Department. So those three gentlemen talked about their technologies, the two technologies from Tom and Patrick, and decided that there was enough interest and excitement around these to form a company. So those, the three of them and Fred Gluck, the former CEO of McKinsey, managing director of McKinsey Worldwide, started CytomX with a little bit of seed money, mostly from the founders, and with these two technologies. Those technologies, again, were the subject of an ICB grant subcontract, which I'll tell you about later, but basically, the intersection of these technologies founded the company. We hired one person out of the university, a postdoc, in the spring of 2006, and subsequently now have four UCSB postdocs that we've hired. We've hired four UCSB, two PhDs and two bachelor's students that have graduated. We have four part-time UCSB seniors working for us now. So the local talent pool, both the founders as well as the students, have been really the key to our growth and success and to our understanding of these technologies and how we might commercialize them. Some of the transfer of the technologies was seamless because of some of those students that worked in the laboratories of our founders. We were able to leverage their expertise directly and bring it over to CytomX and really get a leg up on some of the initial development that would have needed to occur with someone naive to the technologies. So the combination of outstanding founders with passion for this type of industry and the local talent pool has really helped our company get off the ground. Now, that's not to say that we don't even tap the talent pool further than that. We have a graphic designer that's actually in the audience that helped us create animation and graphics that you actually see on the screen here, a web designer that's part of the university that helped us build our website. So everything from the strongest connection to some of the smaller ones, all very important, have helped build our company. I think one of the other aspects that I can't overstate is the relationship with Cheryl, with Dean Terrell, and with others that have really helped us shape our thinking. We learn a lot from our interactions with the Office of Research, with the College of Engineering. We learn about the way academics think about the technologies. Now, it would be really nice if Cheryl had packaged up these technologies with a red bow and had them ready for commercialization. But then again, it wouldn't be very fun. We wouldn't be doing this job if that was the way it worked. Obviously, there's a big leap between taking a technology from a founder in academics, understanding what its limits are and its strengths are, and then bringing them into a safe place in terms of intellectual property, a safe place in terms of exclusivity, and really working with those in a way that everyone understands the goals. And so working with Cheryl, again, in particular, has been great for me. Understanding the way the UCSB system works, understanding how to approach the technology. Again, from an IP perspective, Cheryl being an attorney has been a real strength for our team. And so we take full advantage of that, and I think I would encourage everyone to do so. It's not, you know, this office is not a vehicle just for getting technology into your business. It's really, I think, a collaborative experience. And as you know, at least from a startup's perspective, every good startup starts with a good idea that should change pretty quickly. And so you have an idea about how your company is going to grow and what you're going to do with the technology that you, in our case, option at the moment, close to a license, we hope. But you start to learn more about the other university members that might be able to help you connect your technology to something that they have. So you really, it's a very dynamic process. It's not just, again, signing papers and walking away. I've asked Cheryl in the office for information on other technologies that might complement those that our founders brought to the company, and we'll continue to look at UCSB technologies as we go. I think that's an important part of the relationship. It doesn't end once you sign a license or a material transfer agreement. So let's talk about the technologies. Pictured here are two of the technologies that we're commercializing at CytomX. So again, CytomX founded in 2006. Now, in February of 2008, we have two LLCs that have been formed. One is pictured here, or called CytomX Biosystems, and this takes advantage of Tom So's technology, which is a magnetic cell sorter, magnetic microfluidic platform for separation of particles, cells, bacteria, viruses, analytes of any sort. They can be tagged to a magnetic bead. They can be pulled out of a complex mixture. Our first product in this case will be a laboratory sorter, basic instrument that we hope everyone that has a lab would purchase and put into it for postdocs, for students, and for researchers. We hope to extend this technology into other areas, into diagnostics, into bigger and broader platforms. For now, we think that this is a niche, but this is an exciting opportunity, and we hope that it grows. The other technology that spawned CytomX Therapeutics, which I lead at the moment, is a protein engineering discovery technology. It's a patented bacterial display platform for the discovery of peptides. Peptides as ligands or peptides as protease substrates. So we have worked with this technology to try to build an engine for therapeutics discovery with the potential for companion diagnostics, and we will help you through that therapeutics process if you need it. I know you said you don't have much experience. I think you understated it, but we hope that CytomX can get to something as exciting as therapeutics. This technology is very interesting. But what was very, I think, unique about these two technologies, you might not see an obvious reason that they were formed initially as one company. But through the ICB, the Institute for Collaborative Biotechnologies, we were awarded a 6-2 subcontract to use these two technologies to identify quickly affinity reagents for pathogens for the Army. So the two collaborators, Tom and Patrick, saw an opportunity in their two technologies. Again, two different engineering departments. I think this really speaks to the nice exchange that occurs within the university. And those two technologies, again, were put together, and we have been awarded this 3-year contract. Hopefully, if we get renewed, our third year begins in May. This is a great source of funding. It's that third component, try to spend as little money as you can. So we've benefited greatly. We were able to hire our first employee through this ICB subcontract. I'm the principal investigator on the award, and I interact very regularly with the Army. And this is a great extension of our company. We learn a lot about what the government is interested in. We've made lots of contacts within those agencies, and we think that'll help our company to grow. So the two technologies, again, were the recipient of this award. We intend to apply for a UC Discovery Grant this spring with a member of the Neuroscience Research Institute to look at some of our peptides and some models of macular degeneration. So we hope to leverage, the expertise at the university that's outside the initial realm of where we thought we might be and to take advantage of that. I think no matter how big the company is, you can never do it all on your own. And we certainly appreciate that when you start to talk about an area as complicated as therapeutics or diagnostics, that the basic scientists who spend time thinking about biology and these pathways are really going to be much better suited to helping you think about them than you could ever be with a 15-person company. So we want to take advantage of the local talent there. And again, I think lastly, you know, the ability to take advantage of the resources here, the actual physical resources at the university, have been tremendous for us. Those chips that you see graphically depicted there on the left, they're fabricated in the clean room here. We're not going to be building a clean room anytime soon at CytomX. So we take full advantage of the recharge capabilities that are put in place that offer small companies the ability to stretch their dollars. We've taken advantage of the flow cytometry lab on a recharge basis and currently some microscopy work. Again, for a small company in particular, you're not going to be able to build all of these things at the beginning. We hope to someday. But the university has been great in allowing us to really exploit all the resources that are here. So I think those were the highlights of what I wanted to tell you about our experience. Again, we are in option stage of licensing. We're moving very nicely along towards licensing exclusively the technologies I told you about. We've had great exchange in terms of material transfers, of reagents and things that are covered by those options so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel at CytomX. We are sharing things. I'd also like to say, think that we share back with the university. So a lot of the research that's going on at CytomX directly relates back to some of the microfluidic work in the SO lab and the bacterial display work in the Doherty laboratories. I'm very happy and willing to share technological advances. Obviously, as a company, you have to be sensitive to protecting intellectual property. But if there's something that we do in our laboratory, and it has happened, that you know, we learn about the technologies, we look at them in a different way, we give that back to the laboratories at the university. We hope that they can take advantage of that.
So the Mitsubishi Chemical Group, it's many companies, and their core competence can be divided amongst the functional products, healthcare business, and their initial core business based on Coke and petrochemicals. Here's some examples of their products. So first of all, polymers, polyethylene, polypropylene, polycarbonate, polyethylene terephthalate, butylene terephthalate, and many C4 carbon derivatives, and all some derivatives from the Coke chemistry. You can get the hint here from automobile and lighting markets. But a very important value-added business also is information and imaging. So here we have disks. So at first Mitsubishi had a verbatim for the old floppy disks. Some of us probably can remember floppies here still. And then CDs to DVDs. These are toners for non-impact printing and imaging, photoreceptor drums. I was involved in their development in Virginia. And then also films, materials for the building industry, civil engineering, and also presence in pharmaceuticals and diagnostic reagents. So as you can see, a very diversified chemical company. And like many of these diversified chemical companies, Mitsubishi is in the process of transformation under the rapidly changing markets. So with that in mind, Mitsubishi has made a strategic overview of where the company wants to be in 2015. And these are some of the focus areas. I think the highlights, simply light and colors and clean energy. So again, in terms of light and colors, naturally the image and information storage, recording media, Blu-ray disc. I see Sony has finally won in terms of the HD disc, holographic memory storage. And very important, of course, is lighting. So I think as many are aware, there's a very prestigious solid-state lighting center here, and I'm pleased to say that our previous president, Fumio Arito, is in the audience, and he nurtured a very strong and successful alliance with that solid-state lighting center. And Mitsubishi's phosphors, encapsulants, gallium nitride substrates, zinc oxide, these are all important materials for the solid-state lighting effort. It's going to have a huge impact on society. Energy saving, of course, are lighter materials in terms of carbon fiber and composites. And batteries, Mitsubishi is very strong in lithium-ion batteries, energy storage, and looking to the future for photovoltaics, solar energy, fuel cell materials. So Mitsubishi is looking to the future in all these key strategic areas. So in terms of revenues, this is a future vision, of course, to grow the company. And you'll notice to downsize the relative importance of the traditional bulk commodity petrochemical business and increase instead high value-added functional products and also healthcare because of the demographics of changing society. To do this, there are three important mechanisms that Mitsubishi has identified. First is to form strategic alliances and increase their earnings capacity by many efficiency and cost measures. And what I want to address today here specifically is research and development for new business. And this leads to the alliance with UCSB that I'll talk about, MCCAM. This is Mitsubishi Chemical Center for Advanced Materials. So now I'll give a brief overview of the nature of the alliance we have with UCSB. We have a website, of course. You can see many of the aspects, this URL. And gives a broad overview of the programs, the people involved, some of the history. And there's a password-protected planning area that's very useful. It gives details of the intellectual property and its current stage of development, and also provides reports and feedback from the program. So as Cheryl mentioned, this is a very useful tool for us to manage the program almost in real time, because things change so quickly, we have to capture breakthroughs almost as they happen and recognize them to implement them. So having this facility for sharing information is very important to us. The obvious question, why did Mitsubishi, a large chemical company in Japan, choose UCSB? Well, of course, Mitsubishi could recognize many of the advantages, and the important one is the diverse faculty in materials research, the interdisciplinary nature, and as we've heard from Mike, the world-class research and having centralized equipment resources. But I think a very important component was at that time the chief technology officer of Mitsubishi Chemical was George Stephanopoulos, chemical engineering professor at MIT. And it's through his relationships, I think, with Dean Terrell and recognition of the potential here that this alliance was nurtured and came to fruition, I think 2001. I'll give a short timeline later. But he was a very important component also in the recognition of the potential and its implementation, and particularly with the support of the administrative side. So it's very important to have this flexible, supportive administration through the intellectual property and its terms, and also many of the cost aspects, as Cheryl mentioned, indirect costs can actually be returned into the program to give us many advantages also. So in terms of the whole, this is a very good package for us. And this interdisciplinary nature was best housed under the Materials Research Department, MRL, which embraced the materials, chemistry, electronics, chemical engineering, biochemistry, mechanical, and physics. So as you see, we could tap into this huge wealth of intellectual resources. So here's the brief timeline I mentioned, the inception in 2001. So I call this Generation One. The first initial funded period was for 5 years at $15 million. And during this initial period, we had what were called seed projects for 1 year, and also integrated research projects that are much broader programs. And the idea is to see what promising research would come out of various seeded areas and try to align them to the interests of industry. The program ended in the end of August 2006, and now we're in our second Generation 2, which is funded for 4 years, and here's our present position. But the expectations have changed that we now have existing intellectual property created from the first generation, and this is our treasure, our asset. We have to make sure it is of the best quality to leverage it into the marketplace. Briefly, just some statistics that we involve. You can see the many departments, a large number of researchers and faculty we can draw upon. And here are some of the broad project areas, at least in the first generation. So as you see, we have quite a spread of projects and people we interact with. So it's a very broad-based interaction. So now I'll touch upon some of the operations specific to Mitsubishi Chemical. At first, here's the administrative structure for MC CAM. So Matt sits at the top of this organization. And MC CAM in the blue, we have a governing board, then a steering committee, and Glenn Fredrickson is the director. I'm the associate director. So within here, we conduct the research programs. But also we're housed in the Materials Research Laboratory and draw upon many of their resources. So Craig Hawker is now appointed there as our director of the MRL, and we appreciate the support of the MRL as well. And they have their own independent research programs plus programs that overlap with us. So in terms of space, there was an expansion a few years back of the MRL building, and we occupy about 7,000 square feet now in this building, just behind engineering at the parking lot there next to Corn Hall. And we have the administrative headquarters, conference rooms that are very useful for visitors and the many meetings we have. For example, this April we're having an annual review, so we have many visitors from Japan, workshops, spin-out meetings. It's very good to have these resources to conduct these meetings. And also, if we have visiting researchers, we have offices that they can use. So it's very good, again, as I said, to have these facilities. So the first generation of funding is outlined here. And as Cheryl mentioned, there's various components. We have, you know, a gift component, plus a philanthropy component, plus operations for the program. So in total, $15 million for the first 5 years. So that's quite a large sum of money, and Mitsubishi is very happy to fund this program in terms of the nature of the relationship and benefits they're now seeing from it. So it's been a very worthwhile investment. Because we have these abilities to leverage many of these resources, so we've also heard from Nancy about the UC Discovery Program, where the state will offer matching funds. So we've gone through several rounds of these, and it's very highly appreciated, and also focuses our attention to benefits for the state. So in some senses, we've hired people from UCSB. We have our presence in the state at the local office, our MC Research and Innovation here in Goleta. And we're also nurturing relationships and partnerships with businesses within California. There's a generous return of overhead to allow the MRL building expansion, so we certainly appreciate that. And the MRL, we share equipment, and some of the funding goes to NSF grant to cover the cost of equipment, so we have mutual benefits there. And we've had collaborations and subcontracts to various other universities. Within the UC system, that's very seamless for us because the IP terms and conditions apply universally through the UC system. We've also had some evolve with Florida State when a principal investigator might transfer. We have ongoing programs that involve contributions from Cornell, and also recently we're negotiating contracts with Cambridge. So we're not constrained. There's many possibilities to take this network further afield. And now we're in the second phase, as I mentioned. So we have a four-year renewal, this time $10 million total. And the expectations now from the industrial side are maturing. Naturally, the business people always want to see products and money, so tangible results definitely are very important in this second stage. And to justify the investment to the business group. So I think the key to doing this is to recognize the assets we get, and the primary asset is intellectual property. We have many intangible assets from the nature of the relationship, working with top-class researchers, students. That's a very precious asset too, but to take into the business world, we need very strong intellectual property. So time is of the essence. Things are changing so quickly, we have to catch inventions at the earliest opportunity and develop them quickly to market. So that depends upon the efficiency of processing these intellectual properties and also the quality of the IP itself. That means drafting and crafting the claims. That's a very important step. And naturally, our job, particularly here at MC Research, is to nurture and grow these intellectual properties to the market. So I think from UCSB side, results have been very good today. There's always a cultural gap, of course, between industry and academia. Academic research is somewhat akin to a random walk. It's a path of curiosity-driven discovery. On the other hand, industry is very cognizant of timelines and targeted development to specific products. So the two do not meet very efficiently on a common ground. So naturally, from the academic standpoint, the starting is to have quality publications, because a good idea is worth publishing. And this, we've had 52 publications to date. That's a very large number, and I think speaks of the quality of the research being conducted here. Naturally, this program trains students and postdocs and particularly gives them some hint of industrial applications. And in fact, we've hired people from the UCSB, so it's been a mutual win-win benefit. I'll talk a bit about the number of patents. This is a success story. Technology has been transferred to our parent company. This has also been quite successful. And now the hourglass, we still have to work on the joint ventures startups to transfer into products, sales, and profits. But everybody understands that real business timelines are very long. It's a long road from a really exciting, innovative, creative breakthrough idea to actual products. So now I will explain briefly our local office, MC Innovation Center. We came here in 2002, just after MCCAM was started. We were previously in the Bay Area, and initially the idea was we'd be a local office to simply facilitate the interaction. But facilitating by shuttling information back and forth doesn't really add much value, and I hope to convince you that we're a much more valuable asset than simply an information relay point. And we have this local office, of course, meeting rooms, but in particular a lab. The lab's very important because within the academic research, it's not usual to scale things up into the gram, kilogram quantities that industry likes to see. And we also need to sometimes develop things at a tangent to the main line of research here, because to explore different things in terms of specific applications. So a laboratory is a very important component of that. So really we have three nicely overlapping interactions here. And if we want to focus on the core skill areas, of course, MCCAM does the exploratory research. Our parent company sets the strategy. The process of transferring both discovery and intellectual property to the real business world. And our role overlaps in terms of forming a cohesive network and transferring the ideas, but also independently developing some of the ideas locally within the U.S. Marketplace. So in some sense, we are like a research center for the parent company within the U.S. So here's some of the R&D areas we're focusing on now. New polymers for automobiles, solid-state lighting, as I mentioned previously, organic electronics, memory, imaging and displays, biocompatible materials, and sustainable resources. So, of course, very important areas that many, many companies are also participating in. So we need a competitive edge. Because generally speaking, everybody understands innovation can be put into three different categories. The low-risk category, type A, is simply applications of known technology. In general, this is industrial optimization, and often I'm not too enthusiastic that industrial optimization doesn't really belong in an academic environment. It's a very labor-intensive job, but also it's something you outsource. The real value of the academic environment is simply brain power. That's why we should be here, the creative innovation research. That's the academic creativity component. We should not be hiring simply additional hands. We need creativity. But the problem there is some breakthrough to a killer application is always high risk. And in between, we have some new technology with improved benefits. So to wisely manage an entire program, we need a distribution. We can't simply focus on one specific area. And indeed, when we look at our projects, we do have distributions. And the best case is we can focus on some really significant breakthrough that gives us a very competitive advantage. So part of our role is to effectively manage this. And I guess by the thickness of this wedge, I try to convey some idea of the responsibilities. But first, let's look at the flow. Naturally, research is conducted here, so there's issues of the management of the operations in terms of efficiency and communication, particularly to capture ideas almost in real time. So we have a very good advantage in being close by that we can interact with students at their convenience and really get a feel and handle on how things are going. Because from the academic side, as I mentioned, publications are very important. That is part of the academic cycle to getting funding. It's also students need publications, everyone well knows, to continue on. So novelty is the driver of good publications to intellectual property. Because the next stage, of course, is the quality of patents to give us the business edge. One curious issue that I must mention that naturally we want to secure our intellectual property before open disclosure to the public. So we do set one constraint that before publication we have to secure the intellectual property. So sometimes for academic researchers this is a trifle bothersome that it delays publications or presentations at meetings because Mitsubishi must at first say, yes, it's open, clear, please go ahead, or please wait while we get the IP in place. The next stage, of course, is transfer to our parent company, which has huge resources in terms of equipment, labs, and researchers. So this is the industrialization aspect. And finally, marketing to the attractive product. Now, I'm pleased to say Mitsubishi has also created their own innovation center, whose role is to take this intellectual property to create new business. So in part, we support existing businesses of Mitsubishi Chemical, but a very important role with creative breakthrough research is to create new business. So we have members of our Innovation Center here today, and it is their role to take these new concepts into new marketplaces. So, of course, the largest burden of the management and research is UCSB Research Partners, and we have an overlapping role here to facilitate their progress, communication, understanding of Mitsubishi's strategy and goals. On the other hand, our parent companies are most strongly involved in the industrialization of the discoveries here, so they are heavily weighted here. But I mean to also imply there's this continuous overlap of responsibility. So lastly, and perhaps most importantly, the intellectual property. So again, these have these three important interactions between our parent company, Mitsubishi Chemical Corporation, the MCCAM Alliance with UCSB, and Cheryl's office here at UCSB. And if you want to look simply at the roles, our parent company must, of course, review the intellectual property, also enhance it through the claims and their support. The OTIA office here naturally processes this and It's doing a very good job in managing this intellectual property because it becomes quite complex. There's many stages in the life of a disclosure to an issued patent. And our role here is also to participate with these three functions to make sure the process goes smoothly, on time, and also contribute to drafting the best and strongest claims. That's a very important component. As I mentioned before, the quality of the IP is an essential point. So here's the patent flow, brief schematics, I guess. So we'll start with a disclosure that comes out of the research project. PI means a principal investigator. Then it goes to the administrative office of MCCAM. So Sarah Bard is doing an excellent job for us there in maintaining the flow of information. And she'll then send this on to Cheryl's office. Typically, Oren Livner or Adam will support us there. They will then send it over and have formal review of this by our parent company, and particularly MCRC, Mitsubishi Chemical Research Center. They're the ones involved with the researchers who make the decision to take an option or not. Also, the allocation of funding to the programs. Our role here is to facilitate the important back and forth work with the attorney to take a look at a draft. Usually, a draft has to be reworked. And as it progresses further downstream, many claims get rejected. They have to be strengthened. So there's a lot of back and forth here. So here, for example, are some of the stages in a patent. We have a disclosure. We can elect it, decline to take it, or take the option. It can be a sole or a joint invention. We might decide we want a non-exclusive license here. And best case, it'll be issued. In some cases, we decide to drop it if the claims, there's no way around getting good claims. And it takes a long time to go through all this process. So briefly, the, of course, value of the invention to industry, it's quite simple. It has to be valuable to industry as a whole. We want to establish a key position in business. And it also must fit to Mitsubishi's technology strategy. Mitsubishi, of course, can't be in every business. So we have focused areas and we want to have appropriate patents. And there's many difficulties, of course, in obtaining patents. A lot of existing blocking prior art. So we have to make distinguishing claims and also understand this can be practical within a business manufacturing environment. Many great ideas never make it to real products because there is no cost-effective way to manufacture. And, of course, the future plan our company has to consider. There's a lot of work, maybe, to rework, strengthen claims, and so on. So we consider these general aspects in terms of patent or management of the intellectual property portfolio. So here's some recent statistics. I'm pleased to say we have 46 disclosures. 31 of these are sole UCSB inventions. We have 15 joint inventions, so I think that shows the degree of participation of Mitsubishi, which is good. We shouldn't be idle bystanders. We really need to be partners in this process. And this speaks to the timeline with the Patent Office. For now, we just have three that have finally been issued, but many works in process. So to end, I would like to just say this has been a very productive alliance for us, and it's in line with Mitsubishi's future energy. I'm sorry, future vision based on these three key concepts: light, colors, and clean energy. So research and development, including mergers and acquisitions, come together with materials and processing to some devices that are applied in these various areas. And I guess their catchword is earth-friendly comfort. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast from University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at www.uctv.tv. Thank you for listening.